Yes, it's working, yeah.
Already 18 participants at 11 o'clock, so in principle we could start. Let's wait for Ambra. One, maybe a couple of minutes more. Right. Now, hello everybody. We start with the usual presentation of the speaker, despite that she's at LAM since 2 years, roughly. Maybe not all the people attend this meeting knows Alessia. Alessia, who is at LAM since a couple of years, did the PhD at the Max Planck MPE in Garching with Ortwin Gerhard and Magda Arnaboldi. Well, she continued as usual for the German system for an additional years, for a total of 5 years, right, as a postdoc. Then she moved as a Kavli Fellow at Beijing, at the Kavli Institute, working with Eric Peng. And finally, she joined LAM, working the Vestige project with Alessandro Moselli, PI of some project with CFHT, and working also on Athena, right? One of the few people working on Athena completely right now. So, Alessa, please, you can go for 20, 25 minutes.
Okay. Thank you very much, Carlo. Thank you very much to the organizers to give me the opportunity to speak about two of the projects that I've been leading while at LAM that are connected with the study of how structure evolve, and particularly I'm interested in bridging the evolution of structure from small scale, so galaxies, to larger scale, so cluster of galaxies going through the intracluster medium, that is the medium that permeates the space among galaxies in clusters. I usually like to start with these slides. If you have seen some of my presentations, you will see this first slide. And this is slide, and this is because the focus of my research has been especially on the Virgo cluster that you can see in this image here on the top right part as the largest nearest concentration of mass. So here, each white dot is a galaxy, and the Virgo cluster just comes out as the largest and the nearest concentration of mass. The general topic is study of the intracluster component that, as you might know, is that component that is gravitationally unbound to any cluster galaxy, but it rather fills the cluster potential. Why it's important to study the intracluster component in the evolution of structure, in the topic of evolution of structure, this is because we expect from simulation that it can constitute up to 50% of the baryonic matter in a cluster, and also because we expect it and we are gathering more and more observational constraint that its formation is tightly connected to the formation and evolution of galaxies within the cluster. So you understand that if we are able to create a parameter space, a large parameter space that includes light distribution, kinematics, metallicity, colors, and these for all the components that might constitute these these that might build up this intra-class space, then we can really gain insight into the evolution of galaxies and their hosting environments. So why studying the nearby cluster, nearby clusters, nearby structures? So the idea is that if we're able to find a target that is nearby, but yet not quite dynamically relaxed, so it's dynamically young, I would say, well, then we are in the situation in which we are tracing local analog of over dense region in the high redshift universe, with the difference that we can study these structures at very high sensitivity and spatial resolution. So, for example, here in the center you have the Virgo cluster. This is the entire extension of this structure is on the sky 104 square degree, and this is the GBEN image from the next generation Virgo cluster survey. We know we have several informations kinematic from the spatial distribution, that this cluster is actually still young and is currently accreting matter and building up its intra-cluster component. And so the idea of studying the nearby universe, of course, in parallel with studies at the high redshift universe, is because we have made several steps forwards, we as astronomers, we have made several steps forwards in from the theoretical side and from simulations, understanding or describing the current formation scenario, formation and evolution scenario of structures. But when there is a good agreement between simulations, when there is only dark matter, the situation becomes very much more complicated when baryons are added. And so we need more progress towards the understanding of the assembly of baryonic substructures towards the a better understanding of the astrophysical processes that are yet not well understood. So to do this, we can proceed in different ways. So we can study, for example, different components that do trace the evolution of structures. We can study, for example, the outer halos of massive ellipticals, of massive early type galaxies, so in general, the outer halos of galaxies in class. And here you have an example of the central galaxy of the Virgo cluster. This is M87. Of course, you would like to go the farthest away possible from the centers to find fossil records of accretion events, and this is because so far away from the center of the galaxy, the dynamical scales are longer, and so we can find fossil records of accretion event in the form of kinematical substructures, shell and streams, so light distribution substructures. Of course, to do so, you have to find observational, you have to adopt observational strategies that are not just absorption spectroscopy, and this is because we are speaking about very low surface brightness regions. We are at the level of surface brightness of 28.5 in the B band, magnitude per second square. And so the way I proceed towards this direction was to use bright traces like planetary nebula and globular clusters to find, for example, to find, for example, hints of evolution of galaxies and the intracluster component. Despite this is a very close topic to me, today I'm not going to speak about this. I'm not going to speak about planetary nebula and globular clusters and how they can trace evolution of structures, but I'm rather going to concentrate on survey that go to study mostly the gas and dust distribution, so other baryonic components rather than stars. So here, for example, you have the image of the interaction of a galaxy in the Virgo cluster with the M86, and this is a beautiful tale of a beautiful bridge of HR Phoenician. So this is ionized gas emission that is again witnessing the interaction of galaxies within the cluster. So we do have a lot of information, a plethora of information about stars and gas. We know that when a galaxy falls into a cluster potential in a dense region, it can feel the gravitational interaction with other galaxies or with the cluster potential, or it can feel the pressure exercised by the hot intracluster medium. And so here we are speaking about hydrodynamical processes, or better known as Ram pressure. Repression phenomena. And so then we have that baryons are stripped from the main body of the galaxy, and they can result in beautiful tails of H1 neutral gas. Here you have a beautiful example of H1 tail that is the consequence of Ram pressure stripping of this galaxy in the Coma cluster. This gas can then be also ionized, and so be present in the form of H-alpha. And here you have an example, as I was telling you before, although this is a kind of gravitational interaction, not Ram pressure, not hydrodynamical interaction, but it can also get heated to the temperature of the hot X-ray. And so here you have a beautiful example of tail in the X-ray. And sometimes we also see the atomic molecular gas. We also see molecular gas usually traced through the CO emission. And in this image, for example, you see CO emission in red, there overlaps on the H-alpha emission in green, and here the contours are X-ray contours. So there is also a tail in the X-ray. But what about dust? We have a plethora of information about stars and gas, but what about dust? And why should we be interested in understanding the phase of dust, the evolution, the life evolution of the dust from the galaxy to eventually the intracluster space? Well, we all know that dust plays a central role in shaping the structure of the interstellar medium, influencing star formation in galaxies, and then influences galaxies and cluster evolution in a universe where the baryons are stripped from the main body of the galaxy and are deposited in the intracluster space. But do we really know how how the properties of the dust change as function of the stage of evolutionary stage of the component they are associated with? Unfortunately, the answer to this question is not yet, not in the details that we need to have, but we are doing step forwards, and as I will show you later, with the current and future facilities, we can really gain insights into the life cycle of the dust from the main body to the intracluster space. So then if the dust from the galaxies is deposited in intracluster space, and this happens, for example, if we see that it goes beyond the optical disk of the galaxy, then it provides clue on the injection processes of materials from galaxies into the cluster. And of course, we can trace variation of temperature, of the physical properties like temperature, amount, and size distribution, because we are starting seeing that dust actually does not follow universal law of physical properties, like, for example, the spectral energy distribution and the interaction with the environment might be one of the drivers of its not universality. Moreover, once this dust that is in the intracluster medium, it can represent an important cooling agent in the ISM, and so it can provide crucial information about those baryonic processes like dissipation that we are yet not very much confident to really tune simulations around them. And finding dust in the intracluster medium of cluster can give us insight on the accretion rate of the cluster, and finally on the dust gas interaction from the main body of the galaxy to the stripped component, finishing into the intracluster medium. Okay, but do we think the dust is stripped? So do we think, can we actually observe dust that is passing through these evolutionary cycles? The answer is yes. The answer goes back into the 2016 from a work by Luca Cortese et al. So what they have shown that dust is H1 gas in galaxies is can be distributed on truncated disk. What does truncated disk means? So in this galaxy, in this image, you can see images of galaxies, optical images in the top row. Then you have the spire 250 micron emission, so this would be dust emission. And then you have the H1 gas distribution. And so what astronomers have been defining is the so-called H1 efficiency parameters that here you can see as a number in the top row that just describes the amount of gas, of H1 gas that you have with respect to one that you would expect, taking the same galaxies and put into a field, for example. And you see that going from left to right, so increasing from deficiency of H1, we have galaxies that are more and more truncated in disk of H1 with respect to the optical distribution. And this is true, as Luca showed, also for the dust emission. And so this was one first clue that gas and dust are actually perturbed in a similar fashion by the classical environment. But what was left to answer was to trace direct episodes of stripping of gas, so then we could actually understand whether the properties of this dust with respect to dust, for example, changing from the stage of being connected to the main body of the galaxy to the one of a stripped component. And so here comes one of the projects that I've been working on. This is strip tails and their connection with the intracluster component. Of course, my interest is always connecting small scale to large scale and understanding how the evolution happens between these different scales. And what we have done, we were collecting data that were coming from the survey of Chung et al. 2009. So you can see here the Virgo cluster in its X-ray emission. This is the orange light, and these are all galaxies that have been surveyed by Chung et al. In H1. The different colors represent the different velocity of the galaxy. Of course, this is a massive cluster. Accretion is still ongoing, so you would have, if you would represent this dynamical state with the Gaussian distribution, then you would have a very large Gaussian, so very large sigma, and so you would have galaxies moving with negative velocity and positive velocity in a dispersion that is roughly 800,000 kilometers per second. Okay, so the idea was to take this galaxy to look for those that would have asymmetric distribution in H1. That means that they are feeling they are subject to run pressure stripping. But we also wanted to study the relation with other component, gas component or dust. And so we also took, we only selected those objects that, yes, did have H1 asymmetric distribution, but they showed also a similar distribution in H-alpha, and the data were from the Vestige survey, whose PI is Alessandro Boselli, and far infrared distribution from Habits, Herschel data. And so these are the three galaxies that we could select. So these are in the Virgo cluster, NGC 4330 on top, 4522 and 4654. You see from left to right the optical distribution. This is the G-band NGBS image, the ionized gas distribution, the dust emission with spire 250 micron, and the H1 gas distribution. You you see that tails of stream materials are actually visible in all the bands that interest H-alpha. You see here filaments for NGC 4330, a tail that is visible in the Spire 250 micron and in the H1, and similarly for the other galaxies. I'm not going into details of how significant this emission is, for example, in the Spire band, but I can assure you that these are all statistically significant emission with a signal to noise higher than 3. So this is a statistically significant detection. Just I would like to draw your attention to NGC 4654. This is a galaxy that, yes, has a Ram pressure interaction with the hot intracluster medium of the cluster, but it also have a asymmetric distribution in its stars, and this means that this probably is the only example of a galaxy that is undergoing both tidal interaction and Ram pressure interaction. Just to be certain that we understand each other, Ram pressure interaction, hydrodynamical interaction, would only act on the gas component. If it acts also on the stars, then this is tidal, this is gravitational. And so this is one single case of both interaction happening simultaneously. You might wonder how statistically significant is this sample of galaxies. Of course, I'm aware that this is only 3 galaxies, but unfortunately, we are subject of incompleteness, for example, in the VIVA survey that only surveyed the most massive galaxies. So losing all the low mass galaxies that would be the one more subject to stripping, and also on the coverage of the Vestige survey that hopefully is going to be completed in the next semester. So then we would have more and more data. So as a rule of thumb, you can consider that this is the 5% of galaxies in the Virgo cluster that we expect to be subject to Ram pressure stripping. So far away to be a statistically complete study, this is anyway a pilot study that first identified dust in emission strip from galaxies, and then that is going to give us, that gave us the basis for future follow-up, as I'm going to tell you, as I'm going to tell you later. Okay, so what have we done with this galaxy? First of all, we have studied the relation between the dust and gas, however, in the strip component and only in the part of the tail that is outside the optical disk. So the optical disk in the galaxies is this wide dotted ellipsis. So this means that we are focusing only on this region. And this is because being interested in bridging galaxy cluster evolution, if this component is beyond the optical disk, then it's likely going to end up in the intracluster space. And so going to build up the intracluster dust, the diffuse intracluster dust. And so this is why we only examine this region here of emission. And what we have seen is that when we do the dust to gas ratio, here the dust to gas, the gas is all the gas that we can have. So hydrogen, neutral hydrogen, molecular, and all the other species of gas that that we might expect. When we consider the dust to gas mass ratio as function both of the stellar mass of the galaxy on the left and on the metallicity on the right, we see that the trend that we obtain is somehow different from the trend that we have measured in the main body of galaxies. So in the part of the galaxy that is not stripped, here for the mass and here for the metallicity relation. And so in gray dots and triangles, what you are seeing here, this is the dust to gas ratio for the temperature of the dust of 20 Kelvin. And in the case of no molecular gas contribution, this is triangles, or with a similar contribution in molecular gas and in H1 gas. And this is because we really don't have any strong information on the fact that molecular gas might be stripped together with the gas component instead of having just an in situ formation. This is going to be the topic, one of the main topic of a survey in Virgo that is Vertigo. And so this survey is going to tell us what is the better answers to plot these results. In any case, any consideration that we, any answers that we make, we are off the main relation. And we also checked whether changing the temperature of the dust would make us retrieve the information that comes from the main body of the galaxies. This is shown here in different colors, but as you can see, we would require a very cold dust component, especially also to retrieve the relation with the metallicity that is not very much observed. I mean, we have survey, for example, from the Dustpedia project. They trace the radial variation of the dust temperature as function of the distance from the center. Now, we are aware, we all know that if a galaxy is stripped of some region, these are most likely going to be the outer region. This is because the gravitational potential is just less strong in the outer region, and so the component is less gravitationally bound. And so we do expect cold dust. So we expect dust at a temperature of 15 degrees. However, not even 15 degrees would be enough to explain and to retrieve the variation that we measure in the main body. So the questions are how then you explain the fact that you even find an opposite trend. The answer that I gave now and initially is that this is probably most likely connected to the fact that the more massive is the galaxy, the more concentrated is the dust, the disk of dust within the galaxy. So you have the main body of the galaxy, and the more massive, hence the more matter rich the galaxy, the more centrally concentrated is the dust. More centrally concentrated means that it's going to be stripped less easily, because the dynamical, the gravitational, it's just more bound. And so you would have lower amount of dust that is stripped as function of increasing metallicity, and this is why we retrieve these results. Of course, this can be explained in several other ways, and unfortunately we yet don't have the answer, and this would be very much interesting to follow up, and we did propose a study to follow up this. The answer might be that the properties of the dust may just change from the main body of the galaxies to the strip component. This is because we are moving from a region that is dominated by the interstellar radiation field, so that is heated by the interstellar radiation field, to a more harsh environment where the city is hot X-ray. And so we don't know whether the emissivity might change, and so lower emissivity might explain also lower lower value of dust, or even just other properties like temperature might be completely different. In any case, this study showed that run pressure stripping does build up the intracluster medium of the intracluster dust component in the intracluster medium of the Virgo cluster, and injects dust grains with a rate of 3.2 solar masses per year. Okay, so the second project that is very much connected to the one that I just described is, if there is stripping of dust, if we do observe stripping of dust, as I showed you just now, can we find intracluster dust in the intracluster medium of Virgo? This was a project that had a quite nice outcome, was also the subject of a CNRS, a joint CNRS CNES ENAF press release, and chosen as an astronomy and astrophysics science highlight. And the reason is because astronomers has long been trying to find, to really detect dust in the intracluster medium of galaxy clusters. And this is because, as I was telling you at the beginning, the presence of this dust may have strong consequences on the evolution of large-scale structure of clusters. And so there are usually two different ways to detect dust. The first one is through the direct far-infrared emission, but the expected surface brightness value, density value, is 0.1 megajoule per steradians. So this would be very too much close to the sensitivity limits of all the surveys that we have in infrared. And the second one, instead, is to trace the variation that the presence of dust has on the light of background objects. So what you are seeing here in the left top panel, that is the main plot in this slide, where each of these dots is a background galaxy. And what we have done, we have built the extinction, the B-V map. How? Through the color reddening, the reddening of the NUV minus I, so near ultraviolet, near UV minus I colors. The reason why we have picked this color is because, well, we know that dust is going to have a strong impact, a much stronger impact on the region of the spectrum that is close to the UV. And so given the fact that it's a very faint signal, if can be traced, it can be traced in this spectral range, but also because we have we had information by a work from a work by Samuel Bossier et al. 2016, I guess, that there was a correlation between NUV minus I colors and the extinction. In particularly, he studied the extinction of the Milky Way, and so we could subtract the signal of the dust coming from the series of the Milky Way, thanks to the information that Samuel retrieved, and then study the color, the remaining color excess that we would have. Anyway, if you have to take something about this plot is that the towards the yellow regions, this means that there is most dust. And so this means that the dust is actually growing, the amount of dust is actually growing towards the central region of the cluster. And this is something that you would expect if dust is comes from the stripping of components of the interstellar medium of galaxies. This is because thanks to dynamical friction, the most massive satellites are going to be dragged towards the center of the cluster and so are going to release more dust than in the other regions. The black lines here is just to comparison to compare it with the distribution of the X-ray. There is not a one-to-one correlation with the X-ray as can be seen by eye, but the important is that the strongest peak in X-ray also correspond to the peak in the dust distribution. The other plots, just this is an MCMC simulation for to assess the statistical significance of the signal, and these two plots are to compare with the distribution of serious emission to see that actually there was no, the signal that we were retrieving were not due to residual contamination by serious. Okay, I'll skip this because I've told you enough about this. Just one thing to emphasize that this is actually why we feel that this is consistent with being the result of stripping phenomena. This is because we compared it with the we compared the surface brightness profile of the dust distribution with the surface brightness profile of the intracluster light component, so the optical counterpart of the intracluster component, and with the surface brightness X-ray distribution. And you see that within the error, the distribution is similar. Probably, I mean, it does deviate in the inner region, but this is most likely because patterning phenomena of the dust are going to be very much more harsh in the close to the central part of the cluster. Finally, the dust to gas ratio here is roughly 10 to the minus 4. This is out to 2 degrees from the cluster center. So it's lower than the one that we detect in the strip tails of galaxies. It's a factor 10 lower, and it's a factor 100 lower than the one that is detected in the main body of the galaxy. So let me just say that these projects have been the base of follow-up studies of spin-off science. One is with Athena. We propose to further study the X-ray properties, actually the dust properties of the Virgo cluster, in particularly focusing on the dust pooling through the analysis of density and temperature maps that are going to be provided by Athena, and also by looking at the X-ray scattering around background quasars, because the presence of dust should have an impact on the halo distribution of this light. This was very, very well received by the Athena community, and in fact was chosen as a paper for the Athena special issue. But also we had the idea of follow-up with study with Spica when Spica was still ongoing. I mean, when not ongoing, but was still existing, the idea. With people, we wanted to trace the presence of polarized light due to the fact that there are strip tails of dust. But also, once that Spica is off, we also decided to follow up with JWST, and we actually put a proposal in the last cycle, the cycle one of JWST, because the idea was to trace with JWST the region that would simultaneously map the main body of the galaxy and the tails, these in the mid-infrared properties, of course, because we are going to survey it with MIRI. And this is because we wanted to understand the variation of the dust properties as a function of the evolutionary state of the component. And so understanding whether environmental effects can be the drivers of the non-universality of the spectral energy distribution set of the dust. So we have asked for observation with MIRI, with several filters, five filters, to trace the pH features, silicate features, and dust continuum emissions, and completing it with the data that we already have with Herschel, we have emission, clear emission, spire 250, and upper limits with these two bands. We can then actually trace the variation of the physical properties of the dust as function of the different regions there the dust is associated to. This plot is from Chesley et al. 2014, and it just shows how the set is expected to variate, to change as functional parameters like humean or the fraction of pH. So we should have enough filters to disentangle the degeneracy in the parameters. Just let me say one last thing about this study. This is again, this is H-alpha images in gray with the far infrared emission in red, H1 emission in blue, and UV emission in magenta. The thing that I wanted to say is because of the talk by Doris at the last J-confined circle, is because what we see in H-alpha, especially for NG3, 43, 30, and 45, 22, is the presence of these very elongated and thin filaments, like here for NG3-4330, also here for 4522. And these particularly shape of filaments are expected to happen when there is when the magnetic field is present, and these contributing to the process of stripping. And so whether this magnetic field has an impact also on the dust, we can study if we do this study with MIRI, because MIRI is going to give us the resolution to then compare it to the distribution of the H-alpha, for example. Finally, very fast, I'm also leading a project that is trying to get information on planetary nebula distribution in Virgo. These are data that are already acquired. We have been awarded three nights already, but we also submitted another proposal that was awarded time from the Canadian side, that from the Canadian side, and so we are most likely going to get data in for a total of 4 degrees in the Virgo cluster. What science can be done? Planetary nebula luminosity function and 3D structure of Virgo, specific frequencies of planetary nebula, hence tracing the accretion events in galaxy halos and the intracluster light. And I also would like to point out that this catalog is going to provide candidates of background galaxies at redshift 0.34 O2 emitters and 3.1 Lyman alpha emitters. And I say this because I know that there are people interested in these background galaxies. So it would be nice if this could then result in a joint collaboration that would bring some new and excited science to life. And I'm sure that I'm out of time. So I leave here the summary. And
all right.
If you have a summary, please, if you have questions, please ask me.
Thank you, Alessia. Your nice talk and very detailed, extended pedagogical introduction. So please raise your hand or just unmute and ask. Participants. Waiting for people. Can you tell a bit more about the Athena proposal?
I should tell a bit more about the Athena proposal.
A bit. No, if you can.
Yeah, I mean, the project is still going to be defined in its complexity, but the idea was that if there is dust pooling happening because of the dust in the intracluster medium of Virgo, and we know this because we have traced the extinction by dust, and we know that given the temperature and the density of the gas distribution in Virgo, dust acts as a cooling. We might actually have privileged information about where to look for region of cool gas by the dust, because we do have the information about the dust distribution. And so this would be the first study, one of the first two study about cooling of gas through dust. And the second one, this is a little bit more uncertain. I still have to study quite a lot and ask for feedback. The thing is that the presence of dust does have an impact on the distribution of quasar light, and so this can be connected to the homogeneity of the dust and also to the dust properties. And so we might be simultaneously being able to trace variation of dust properties and the variation of the properties of the cluster given the presence of dust.
Thank you. I don't see a raised hand, maybe because people already know you very well and so well that I see also people which were not at LAM before confinement. In the chat, no one.
Maybe I have a small question on this proposal that you sent for the GWST. Yeah. to trace the to disentangle the properties of the dust and to detect the pH's features. Yeah. What are the plans when you get these? I work with Seagal, so of course. Are you going to use something like Seagal for it?
Yeah, the idea is to use either Seagal or even other, I mean, especially Seagal, because we have people that are expert in using Seagal, but we also have other approaches based on the Bayesian interpretation, other approaches rather than Segal, to study the set distribution and set fitting. So yes, this would be the idea, mainly to use start using Segal, yeah. And then of course compare it, yeah, because we want to compare it with the model from the Milky Way, for example, and so the amount of PIH that we might find, if different from the one of the Milky Way, they might give us insight on the, for example, chemistry of the environment and radiation field.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Can I ask the question, please?
Yeah, please. Hello, Thomas.
Yes. Do you have regions that are particularly empty of dust or other stuff?
Okay. For example, looking at this map, so the dust seems to be quite uniformly distributed, and actually you would see this in this plot, that is the symmetric distribution looking at the north part from the center of the cluster and the southern part, and so it has a quite symmetric distribution. Unfortunately, the hole that we have here, this is not because probably there is no dust, but of course it's because we miss of background galaxy formation. So there are not background galaxy there, and consider that this is already the information about the from the SDSS, so this should be the largest number of background galaxies that we can retrieve. If you ask me if there is a not symmetric distribution, for example, of the intracluster light component, the answer is yes. Of course, if you go on scale of 1 degree, you would see, you average out almost all the signals, so you would have a symmetry. But if you go on smaller scale, look at this, for example. This is the central part of the Virgo cluster. This is a quite famous image in the V-band of Mihos et al. 2005. The presence of, the fact that Virgo is still accreting, so there are still galaxies falling and leaving their debris in the intracluster component, make the Virgo cluster having a complicated network of tidal features, as this one, for example, or a plum here. So the distribution we do expect to be quite not regular on a scale that are, of course, smaller than 1 degree. Unfortunately, for the dust component, we had to average on such a large scale because the signal was too weak. And Virgo is dynamically young. This means that also in terms of kinematic distribution is characterized by structure, right? So we would have a very non-Gaussian distribution of the velocity of its galaxies. And also there are substructure in the light, like, for example, this is M87 at the center of Virgo A, but we do have another substructure here that is M86, the subcluster C with M86 and M84. And then more south, we have another clump of matter that is central on M49. So.
Thank you for your answer, and thank you for your nice seminar.
Okay. I don't see any open micro or a raised hand, so maybe we can stop here. And thanks again, Alessia, for your talk. I'd like just to remind you that today, exceptionally, we have a second seminar, a second coffee club at 4 p.m., the speaker is calling from Chicago, so that's the reason why we're doing at 4 p.m. Gravitational waves cosmology with the galaxy surveys. Thank you very much.